Hey, this is D Knight.
This is Ty.
And Carol has returned from her hiatus in Europe and attempting to escape the incoming Nazi regime. But she's currently busy trying to find another way, another place to flee, as it did not seem suitable over there. And you're listening to the Pardon the Insurrection podcast, where Jesus Christ, man, what the fuck are we going to do? What are we going to do? It's already out of control. Trump's not even in the White House yet. The headlines are insanely bonkers. Every single day, it's some new ridiculous absurdity revealed into the public about how Trump is either insane or is a liar or is a criminal or is a thief. It's out of control. I don't know how to stop it. I don't even think most of us are going to survive the next 4 years if he even leaves office in the next 4 years. But I guess, fingers crossed, we can hope that he dies soon.
I seriously doubt in our lifetime we're going to see this corrected. It's going to be 80 years down the road. And then when they go to the history book, they're like, what happened to America? And then they go back and, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to be ideal. No. And, you know, so this idea of like, how long will it take to undo the damage of a Trump administration? Well, we had 4 years, one of the best, most productive presidents, or at least in terms of their first terms, that we've ever had. And he didn't undo half the damage that Trump caused this country. And his inability to fix it fast enough is part of the reason why Trump got reelected to a second term, even though he is now currently
at racism.
Well, racism is always baked into United States presidential elections. Like, that has been a theme since the founding of the country. It just, I mean, I think that goes without saying. Or, you know, maybe people need a history lesson to have like some kind of refresher course about how racism was largely the determining factor in almost every presidential election since the founding of the country. But that's neither here nor there. We don't have time to do all of that. We'll save that for 2000 February, should we ever survive the incoming apocalypse. But yeah, in case you missed it, so Trump is now officially a convicted felon. Took long enough. Judge Merchan finally sentenced Trump. Now, of course, I know everyone's disappointed. You're looking at the legal system as though it's some kind of failsafe to protect us from, you know, criminal masterminds attempting to amass power and overthrow the United States government. That is, in fact, not what it's made for. Like, if you wanted Trump held accountable criminally, Merrick Garland, Jack Smith, even Robert Mueller, once upon a time, told us that as long as Trump is in office, he's going to be largely held unaccountable. So you have to do your civic duty and ensure that not only you vote him out, but that you convince everyone that you know to make sure that he never ends up back in office. And we didn't do that. And so the consequences
of not,
yes, the consequences of the American public not doing their jobs as prescribed by the Constitution and casting their vote has led us to a set of circumstances where Trump is largely getting off scot-free, aside from the fact that we can now officially call him a convicted felon without the possibility of facing any kind of lawsuit for libel or slander, depending on which medium you choose to partake in calling him a convicted felon. But we did, however, have Judge Merchan in New York overseeing this case. And he made a couple of comments in regard to the situation at hand. And Jesus Christ, man, like, as intelligent as this person is, and I understand the position he was in with the sentencing, I mean, his comments, while also true and accurate, or sound kind of fucking ridiculously tone deaf.
It is the office of the president that bestows those far-reaching protections to the office holder. And it was the citizenry of this nation that recently decided that you should once again receive the benefits of those protections, which include, among other things, the Supremacy Clause and presidential immunity. It is through that lens and that reality that this court must determine a lawful sentence. After careful analysis, in obedience to governing mandates, and pursuant to the rule of law, this court has determined that the only lawful sentence that permits entry of a judgment of conviction without encroaching upon the highest office in the land is an unconditional discharge, which the New York State Legislature has determined is a lawful and permissible sentence for the crime of falsifying business records in the first degree. Therefore, at this time, I impose that sentence to cover all 34 counts. Sir, I wish you Godspeed as you assume your second term in office. Thank you.
All right. So as you can see there, Marshawn is helping on following the Constitution to the letter of the law as it's been interpreted by the Supreme Court here recently in the most insane of ways, practically guaranteeing that Trump, should he have returned to office, at least when they made the decision, largely have no consequences for any actions that he takes while in office. So Judge Marchand is operating under that presumption. Now, I do believe it was Marchand's duty to enforce some kind of sentence on Trump, even if it weren't prison time, but he definitely probably should be serving prison time for his attempt to illegally.
I mean, Trump doesn't get sworn in until the 20th. Could he have at least sentenced him to like 5 days?
5 days. look, so I,
you know, he could have made him miss his Reichstag fire rally on the 19th.
All right, you know what? So I'm gonna be fair to I'm gonna give Marchand the benefit of the doubt first before I give you a counterpoint. So he could do that. That sentence would be immediately appealed up to the Supreme Court. Trump's argument that the constitutional duty of him to prepare for a presidential transition before he takes office is more imperative than him serving his prison sentence. And we've seen what the Supreme Court is up to here lately. They barely got to a 5-4 decision when it comes to releasing Jack Smith's special counsel report. English is difficult when it's your first language. So that likely would probably get the sentence struck down and would invite them to interfere in the conviction in a number of ways that would likely be a negative outcome. Now, again, what I do think he should have done is, again, like, we know it's going to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court decision would obviously be bad. What he could have done is likely sentenced him to, you know, X amount of time in prison and postpone the sentence until after his presidency.
That's a good idea. Or if he had fucking remanded his ass back when he was violating fucking the gag order that would have been nice.
Yes, it would have been great. But again, that's yet another decision that would have been appealed up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court would have intervened and probably had that decision reversed. And this is the problem, right? The problem isn't really that the legal system isn't holding Trump specifically accountable. It's that it wasn't designed in any fashion to hold the most or one of the most powerful people in America accountable once they've held the office of the presidency. It just wasn't made for that. And so the real solution here is we never should have let him win in 2016. And then we didn't learn our fucking lesson in 2024. I mean, that's really the
bummer. Yeah, no, that's true. And that's a good point that it was up to us because we already knew. And then of course, with the courts stacked and packed by him and McConnell, you know,
including Judge Aileen in South Florida, where Trump currently resides, which he installed her post 2020 election after he had already lost. But yeah, continue. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was up to us. You know, that's just the bottom line. And of the 90 million people that didn't bother to vote, you know, never mind the popular vote. I don't care about that because we know it's about the Electoral College right now. Fuck those non-committed, because those 232,000 votes, that was all that stood between her winning this presidency. And yeah, of course, they would have challenged everything. It would have been fun. But America still.
No one wants to hear that. They want to hear us shit on law enforcement and the legal system and all the courts and the judges and Merrick Garland and Jack Smith and Robert Mueller and so on and so forth. I mean, I do have a bone.
No, I'm shitting on non-committed. I'm shitting on them. For real. And at this point, you know,
It's totally
like,
understandable.
Deport all the motherfuckers. So like, I really right now, I don't give a fuck about you. I don't, because you were real proud of yourself. And what I don't get is like, if you really gave a fuck, you would have been protesting both sides equally. You would have been protesting outside of Trump rallies as well as Kamala rallies. You would have, you probably wouldn't have gotten in like you were able to get into the ones for the Democrats, but for
Trump
Kamala.
Campaign did their best to keep protesters out of Trump's rallies, because again, they understand that electoral politics at this point is just a reality TV show.
But he, and there's, you know, no better candidate for that. He was like, they can do what the fuck they want with God, you know. And then it's like, did you not like? What do you think is going to be better? What do you think you're going to be? Because at least you may not be happy with Biden or Harris's support of Israel as our ally. And I do consider it more of a support of Israel than Bibi. I don't believe that.
No, it is definitely a support of a people and not necessarily a specific government. And I can give you the perfect example. Us trying to remain allies to Israel in circumstances such as we're currently facing is the same as our allies trying to remain loyal and reasonable, responsible allies to the United States with Trump in office. That's practically the same thing.
That's a good, I didn't even look at it that way, but that is a perfect analogy. That's perfect.
That's what it is. And I feel for the Israeli people. They don't want Bibi there. He's not there because of the will of the people. He is there because he created an alliance with a minority of support on the left and a bunch of just a coalition of right wing support inside the Israeli legislature that allowed him to stay and maintain power through the course of this war. And then again, like,
that's why he's keeping the war going, because as soon as the war's over, elections resume, and that's what he was trying to keep from happening was the elections.
And he played the game. He played it to perfection at the expense of many lives, both Israeli and Palestinian, unfortunately, and did enough to help. He's not solely responsible, but I'm sure he certainly helped contribute to Trump's win in some fashion. And then Trump is a staunch Bibi Netanyahu supporter, not an ally of Israel. And that is, when people are like,
that's a good point.
When the people are looking at like Republicans and Democrats and what's the difference? Well, that's literally the difference. Democratic people, Democratic elected officials are allies of the Israeli people as well as the Palestinians. Because trust me, they're the only ones that have been trying to get aid to the Palestinians. Trump is a friend of Netanyahu only. That's his only concern.
Yes. And you know what? It makes me think about Joe Biden's speech. What was that, in the 80s or early 90s when he was in Congress? And then he was like saying, he's like, our loyalty isn't to South Africa. Our loyalty is to South Africans, the people who are being excoriated by this white racist regime. Like, he was, and that was it. He goes, it's not to South Africa. It's to the South Africans. And that's where he stands today. That's always been who he was. The loyalty is to the people.
Yeah. Now, we just don't. I mean, look, this is this is not the venue to I don't know. We can't encapsulate the entirety of the Israeli-Palestine conflict because, I mean, we just, again, would be here for 20 hours. But back to Trump being reelected president. Well, I hope everyone out there who voted for him is getting everything they asked for, because I assume, these conservatives were talking about voting out Democrats and putting Trump back in office because they wanted to get rid of the warmongers and the endless wars and losing, American lives and spending billions of dollars on meaningless conflicts. And yet here we have Trump on the verge of starting a war with one of our allies.
What's the price tag?
Well, maybe no price tag. Look, we're going to have to see what happens, because Denmark, we need this for national security. We need Greenland very badly. You look at the Russian ships, the China ships, they're all over the place. They're you know, surrounding. Now, they have for a long time. That's a lane. But we need that for national security. So I don't know that Denmark has any right title and interest, and we're going to find that. But I can tell you, you saw the clips that were released. The people of Greenland would love to become a state of the United States of America. We were greeted with tremendous love and affection and respect. The people would like to be a part of the United States. Now, Denmark maybe doesn't like it, but then we can't be too happy with Denmark, and maybe things have to happen with respect to Denmark having to do with tariffs.
That is Trump threatening Denmark with tariffs if the United States isn't allowed to annex Greenland.
For free. But did you notice, though, during that press conference, he doesn't say anything about national security. He said we need it for our financial security. He said it twice.
It's absolutely insane. Yes, he and if you tack on Greenland along with the idea of annexing Canada along with Panama for whatever reason, the conclusion you can clearly draw here is that Trump is intent on starting a war with the entire Western Hemisphere.
Well, they are. The president of Panama said that, or he was talking. He was talking to the former president, and the former president had stated that he mentioned to him that he's going to take him to. It's not the ICC. It's one of the other international courts. I'm not sure which one. I can't remember offhand.
That's okay. One of the few.
Yeah. One of those that do that kind of stuff. But the thing is like, yes, you can go to the Greenland people, but it's still Denmark's territory. So Denmark has to either agree to release them, because if it's so much that the people of Greenland want to be free of Denmark and be their own country, well, if it was that easy, they could have already done that.
This is the equivalent of Mexico announcing that they're going to annex Puerto Rico.
That would not be a bad idea, actually. But that would not be a bad idea. Did you hear where Justin Trudeau said at an interview that he was like, "Well, you know, we'll swap." He goes, "How about we swap out? What was it? Oregon?" And it was like two states. Yeah, Oregon, and then he's like, "We'll trade you." And he was like, "You know, it wasn't such a joke anymore to Trump." You know, yeah. Maple MAGA, Doug Ford. Yeah, Doug Ford, even he said, yeah, fuck that. And he's a huge Trump supporter. So,
yeah, my God, the crack smoking dude that was out with the horse. No offense to the horse.
Okay.
Doug Ford.
I don't know.
No, I'm going to have to Google that one. Okay, don't make me Google it. Should we take Trump seriously on his threats to annex other countries and other territories?
Yes.
Well, so here's the thing. Trump says things that are totally unserious, but he also means them. So.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Right.
Now, I would also say largely that all of this talk about Canada, Panama, Greenland, etc., is an attempt to distract from the fact that, one, he has no plan whatsoever on how to end the war in Ukraine, even though that he promised he would do that within days of him winning the election, not taking office, winning the election. He since walked that back. Also, there's no plans whatsoever for Republicans when it pertains to reducing the price of groceries and items of necessity for American households.
The price of anything.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, he's talked about lowering the price of gas. We're going to drill. He said that the United States is going to drill more. Hey, buddy, we're drilling more oil than we're producing more oil than we ever have in the history of the United States, and more oil than any other country. And also, like, his promises on day one to begin the mass roundup and detention of undocumented immigrants in America. This is a distraction from the promises of doing that. Now, again, I don't think that he has any intention of forestalling that plan. I think that he's going to do his best with the Department of Homeland Security to begin some form of mass roundups. Now, it's going to be inefficient. They're going to fuck it up. You know, again, Trump's largely intelligent. These plans aren't thought out. They're going to take massive action, and it's going to, while be it be unsuccessful, cause massive amounts of harm both to individuals and to the United States economy as a whole. But he's going to try it. He's going to fuck it up. It's going to implode in his face. And we're going to be, again, involved with just endless headlines and unending coverage of Trump's not only stupidity, but his just failures to run the country in any sort of reasonable fashion.
Did you see where Stephen Miller said that they're trying to find a disease they can pin on the migrants so that they can re-implement Title 42 again? I swear to God, I am not, this is not parody. I am not joking. This is real. They're like maybe that's why Robert F. Kennedy's like, no vaccine. So they're like, oh shit, we got a polio outbreak. We got to quarantine. We got to send them out. But yeah, they're looking for a disease.
We're living in the dumbest possible times. But, you know, this is the America that we all deserve. To be honest, if we couldn't wake up enough people to make a rational decision in voting for Kamala Harris in 2024, and this is what we ended up with, this is largely.
It's sad to say what I tell myself to make myself feel better, and that there's light at the end of the tunnel, is I go, well, my ancestors, they survived slavery and they survived Crow. And they managed to get jobs and buy houses too and do stuff. So,
I mean, so I would say
that's
it's
where
one,
my brain is right now. Like, that's where my mind is.
Yeah. Our ancestors, given the circumstances, were extraordinarily resilient, just considering the amount of oppression they faced over hundreds of years. Even, you know, 100 years after slavery, the country was systematically destroying Black families and neighborhoods and any kind of institutions, Black wealth, and that our people continue to not only survive, you know, all of those endeavors, but it in some situations even thrive. It does point to the resilience of Black people in America. Now, I don't necessarily think that just because, you know, our people were able to find a way to navigate that set of circumstances that we should force that same hardship on as many people as possible. But I mean, that's that's where we are. That's what we've gotten ourselves into. And I think at this point, I just look at the United States as no longer a symbol of what things could possibly be, even though they're not always ideal. Now I see the United States as an example of what not to do for countries around the world.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, if we could have been more like, you know, South Korea, we wouldn't be here.
But hey, look,
I mean, who would have thought that we'd be looking to South Korea as the bastion of democracy for the Western Hemisphere?
So politics in South Korea is different. It's not like the United States for numerous reasons. And again, I don't even have the expertise to necessarily detail all the ways and why it's such a vastly different political landscape. But part of it is North Korea is right there on their border. So they don't kick it the same just for, again, like they have different concerns than the United States does. Like our country's infatuation with immigration over the past hundred years or so pales nothing in comparison to what South Korea is dealing with on their northern border. And I just, you know, again, they just have a different outlook on what they expect out of their executive branch down there. And that shit, the dude tried to pull with a military coup and South Korea was out of control, but they got that motherfucker out of there immediately.
I mean, they literally, it was like motherfucker in the bar And they get that, doo doo, you trying what?
Oh, no, that was out of the streets.
And there was this Korean reporter that she was out there and she's like reporting like 1 a.m. when they're lifting up the parliament, people to go in there and vote over the wall and all that shit. She and then incredible. They were like, why are reporters drunk at 1 a.m? She's like, we're the Irish people of Asia. She's like,
No shade to the Irish.
She was like, you don't know much about Koreans, do you? Because they were like, well, everybody got out the bar. She's like, we love to train that every, it was just so funny on the thread. I was like, I didn't know that. They were like, yeah, we're the Irish people of Asia.
Right. So. And for them, they've recently, I mean, they've had a potential failed military coups in not maybe the youngest generation's lifetime, but the older generations are familiar with the time before democracy was,
yeah,
before they had a democracy in South Korea. So they is like, we ain't going back for real.
There are a lot of countries that have relatively new democracies compared to us.
Yes.
You know, where in the 70s and other times. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even Mexico has, I mean, and even now still, like the PRI pretty much ran. That was like basically a one party state for forever. Like they're pretty much, and now the Morena party pretty much runs everything. But yeah, but they Claudia Sheinbaum, but she's really smart. I didn't know she was a PhD and a scientist.
Yeah, she's very smart. She's bright. She's politically astute, but she's also not, again, like, I wouldn't say that she's a bad actor, but there's a lot of Republican light tactics that take place inside the left-leaning party there.
Well, the Marina party, yes. And I was concerned because I knew that she was handpicked pretty much by AMLO to be his successor. Because, you know, right. Mexico's all one term, so that's it. Yes. But I knew that she was handpicked, so I was concerned that she would be a puppet, and I knew that he was not necessarily a Biden fan, and he is a little more conservative. However, under his leadership, Mexico did a lot of progressive things like decriminalizing abortion, same-sex marriage. They have the second largest pride parade in the world during Pride, and that's in Mexico City. So, and they call Puerto Vallarta the gay Riviera. So they are very open in a lot of ways, and despite being a predominantly Catholic country, I mean, the Supreme Court voted unanimously to decriminalize abortion. And then you've got, was it Zacatecas? They had elected a gay mayor, a male gay mayor. And then there were several gay people
anyone who doesn't realize how like this is stretching the bounds of liberal politics in Mexico, like if you've looked at the Latin American community and how they tend to vote more and more conservative as they get older, I mean that should kind of put it into context for you. Yeah. So
But it's sort of like they have several transgender members of their Congress, you know, openly, and he appointed an openly gay woman to be in his cabinet. And she was actually the first gay person. She was arrested. She was protesting. This was like in the 70s. So it was kind of a full circle moment, which was kind of cool. But, you know, he doesn't personally believe in abortion. He's kind of like Biden on that. And like, personally, I have my own feelings. You know what I mean? However, I believe in a woman. And it was kind of the same thing. But I am impressed with how strong Claudia Sheinbaum is and how she is standing up to Trump and doing a little bit of trolling too. And then she has
she understands political theater at a high level, right? We at this point we get it. Politics has now become a reality TV show, and she is out there performing at every possible turn. And she,
you know what they say, you have to dragging up the points where they are. So she's talking to Trump in a way that he can understand.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think American politicians on the left could learn a couple lessons from her in that regard, in how to hold court, how to present to an audience, how to get your point across, and how not to be a little bitch. But, you know, again, that's not anything that I could possibly force upon Democratic politicians myself. And given the fact that I am likely not fit to run for office myself, I mean, I guess you know what? Trump's president. Anybody can run for anything at this point. I don't know. But so we did have comments from President Biden the other day on a number of issues. One in particular I thought was extraordinarily interesting. His thoughts on the 2024 election and how he believes that personally he could have beaten Trump. And we'll hear that clip right now.
Mr. President, do you regret your decision to run for re-election? Do you think that that made it easier for your predecessor to now become your successor?
I don't think so. I think I would have beaten Trump, could have beaten Trump, and I think that Kamala could have beaten Trump, would have beaten Trump. It wasn't about, I thought it was important to unify the party. And when the party was worried about whether or not I was going to be able to move, I thought, even though I thought I could win again, I thought it was better to unify the party. And it was the greatest honor of my life to be President of the United States, but I didn't want to be one who caused a party that wasn't unified to lose an election. And that's why I stepped aside, but I was confident she could win.
All right, so I largely agree with Biden there. I do think he's wrong in the sense that could Biden have won this election in 2024? Yes, if not for the catastrophe that the media imposed on the country for over a month straight after the debate, which he underperformed, even though no one talks about how absolutely insane everything Trump said was and how, you know, endless, like we discount the endless lies because it's Trump, but any other candidate, in comparison to Joe Biden's performance would have been sank by the performance that Trump put on. I do believe once that occurred and the media spent a month endlessly obsessing over Biden and his age and whether or not he should drop out. And then, you know, numerous supposed left wing commentators indulged in the idea instead of doing everything they could inform the American people and just show all the clips of Biden performing stellarly in public post-debate. They sat there and basically brainwashed everyone to believe that it was impossible for Biden to win, and up to the point where even members of Congress and the Democratic Party were about to turn on Biden. And once we got to that point, not only could Biden not have won the 2024 election, no one could have. And we saw that. We saw that fairly clearly. Kamala Harris's stellar performance in terms of you know, enthusiasm inside the base, the fundraising, the public interactions, you know, the rallies, the appearances on podcasts and such. And even with all of that and the gazillion dollars in the bank, she lost to Trump in every swing state, even though the deciding factor in the election was three swing states and a couple hundred thousand votes. And she performed about as well as you could expect anyone to in the circumstances, with a short runway being thrust into the national spotlight, the nomination a couple of months ago before the election.
The thing is I honestly believe that there was too much money put into Project 2025. They were not going to let any Democrat win the presidency. They went all in on that. And that bill was going to come due on their investment, period. The only thing is that Kamala made them spend more money than they would have had to spend against Biden. Because with Biden, they just probably would have showed some old, like some clips of him like slipping or falling off his bike. But with Kamala, they had to come out of their pocket to the tune of they had to go all in a way that they weren't expecting. And I feel also like it wasn't, they weren't spending that money for Trump to win. They were spending that money. They wanted Kamala to lose. It wasn't about Trump winning. It was about her losing. They were focused on her losing. So they spent all of their time just focusing on wedge issues that they could relate to her or somehow connect to her.
Or the Democratic Party in general.
Yeah. To, you know, but because, you know, he really didn't have to do anything. And because mainstream media doesn't show his batshittery, you know, that it was like she was running against another sane person, which was the opposite of true.
Right.
you know? And
it was just the issue. Like, there was the fact that even though Trump wasn't the incumbent, because Kamala Harris hadn't won a presidential election, Trump at that point became the incumbent. And again, if you have even the sense of incumbency, it is extraordinarily difficult as a candidate for you to lose, even though Biden beat Trump by a gazillion trillion votes in 2020. And that was the thing. So I don't think largely as far as the 2024 election is concerned, if Trump had stayed in office, Biden had stayed in the race rather, and we hadn't had that debacle of a media implosion after the debate, I think Biden probably would have won just on the fact that people are bored. They don't pay attention to politics, and people largely just vote for whoever they voted for the last time. And maybe you have some, you know, the hyper focused, that I don't even know if this exists, but like the hyper focused and hyper informed undecided voter. I don't even know if that's a real demographic. It's probably not, those people might have been swayed by some of the information Republicans were putting out there. But I think largely what happened is the party switched candidates at the last second. And then a bunch of people who voted for Biden in 2020 were like, oh, he's not on the ticket, I guess I won't be voting. And a bunch of people who've already voted for Trump once or twice were like, I guess I'll just vote for Trump again. And the numbers kind of pretty much reflect that. It was dumb.
Yeah, because he didn't really gain much. It wasn't like he gained a whole swath of America. No, though he likes saying that he did.
There was a huge jump from 2016 to 2020 in 7-8 million voters. And then he improved upon that number marginally with like 2 million voters or so.
2 million. Yeah, like 2 million votes.
Yeah. But again, you know, had Biden been in the race, maybe those 81 million voters would have showed up again and cast their vote.
The George Clooney's and those people had not waffled and turned their backs on him, and the party stayed unified, because, you know, scenario, he could have decided that he wanted to resign and then we had Kamala anyway.
Well, he wasn't going to do that. I think that would have that too would have been a recipe for disaster. There was no outcome that would have been where Democrats could have been victorious once the party split. I mean, I think it was over at that point. And we talked about that for like a month straight on this podcast. I'm sure, you know, our listeners out there, you were tired of hearing that shit. You were like, can we just get Biden out of here so we can like get back to business? Well, we did that and you saw what happened. And again, like at that point, I mean, there was no winning situation. We said that.
Your business was to get your ass behind Kamala, motherfucker.
Well, we tried to do that. We tried to do that, but I had warned people that even though I thought Kamala Harris would win, and she performed where I thought.
So did I.
Well, she got a percentage. Well, she got in just raw numbers what I thought she would have got, but I just thought numerous Trump supporters wouldn't show up and she would win. Just because Trump lost support, that just turned out to not be the case. And there was solution to that
problem. And then you just throw in all those other outliers, like I said, the non-committed. And they knew that they weren't going to really peel off too much of the black vote. But they knew in those swing states, if they could peel off enough of the disgruntled Arab and Muslim vote, that would be all they needed to clinch.
They really didn't even succeed in that outside of maybe Michigan slightly. Really where they won is Trump just won a bigger margin of white people. White people decided the election largely. And you know what Biden's superpower was? Getting white people to vote for Democrats. It was insane. I don't know why we gave that up. That was
a good point. And he has a penis.
I think it's complicated. We'll have to talk about the implications of.
We did have a white lady too.
Switching.
There was a time.
Well, then the white lady got more votes than the white guy, but no one wants to talk about that. They just want to talk about
Michigan failed her too.
Yeah, well, that's
fucking Michigan. God damn it.
Get it together up there, y'all. Detroit, I know y'all are on the ball, but the rest of the state, man, this shit is like outside of Detroit, Michigan is like Kentucky. It's insane.
That is true. But isn't that every fucking even blue states, like pretty much
People forget about this.
I mean, come on. You got Atlanta, you got Cobb County, and then you got Marjorie Taylor Greene. So, I mean.
Oh, Atlanta is a totally separate. It's a different planet compared to the rest of Georgia. But yeah, like you said, in the north, like blue states. Oh, blue states are like that, too. Once you get out of these metro areas and their surrounding suburbs, it gets real wild out there. Except unlike the South in the rural areas, there are no black people in the rural areas up north. It ain't no, we don't kick it up there out there in the wild. We don't do it.